Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to the JNJ Podcast. This podcast is part of the Torn by Sports Podcasting Network.
We are coming at you Monday night, October 24th, 8:47 p.m. Jimmy Chesh here on the J&J Podcast. Another episode, and we got a lot to cover as we were unable to record last week as both myself and my main man Jeff were both out of town. We were unable to get the show recorded. Jeff, we got lots to talk about tonight, man.
Yeah, it's a busy week. So you know, we apologize to those who were looking for an episode last week. Weren't able to get it done, but you know, this week is a big week, and you know, the only way it would have been bigger is if BYU had a game this week, which they had the bye. So I mean, it's jam packed, and we got a lot to cover. So hopefully, you know, you guys stick through it, listen to the whole thing, because we got a lot to talk about, and I think you're gonna like it.
Yeah, we always appreciate all the feedback. Really makes the show a lot better when we've got, you know, people involved and, you know, getting their thoughts in on what they want us to talk about. This is episode 10, part of the Torn by Sports Podcasting Network and Blog Talk Radio. We are grateful for those affiliations for being able to make this happen for us. And big game this week, man. But before we dive into that, we have got to cover the last two games for the Utes. And it is all about the Joe Williams Show up in Salt Lake City.
Yeah. What a turnaround it's been for Joe Williams. It's quite remarkable. I think it's kind of the story right now, or one of these stories in college football. I'm sure with game day coming to town, they're going to, you know, there's a lot of storylines that they can touch on. But, you know, I give credit to Joe coming back, and you know, after you've been gone for so long, it's not easy to just say, yeah, we're ready to go and want to do it, because I'm sure he enjoyed the rest that he was getting, hanging out and doing things and getting things ready with his fiance and getting their life ready to go. But, you know, give good credit to Joe. But, you know, I can't look past what that offensive line's been doing as well, especially in the UCLA game. They just, you know, they are putting such big holes that it made Joey Williams' job even easier. Now, he had the closing speed, you know, he's the 4.340, so, you know, to burn by the secondary, that's, you know, that's him at that point. But, yeah, I mean, just a big turnaround. And you look back at the Oregon State game, we won't touch too much on that because that was a couple weeks ago. But, I mean, just the elements were crazy. It was raining extremely hard, and the wind was coming down. So, yeah, I mean, it was good because Utah had to rely on the run, because they just could not throw the ball in those conditions, as both teams struggled with it. And they escaped Corvallis with the win. I mean, there's not much to say. You know, Oregon State's one of those teams that, you know, they got Cal the week before, and you know, it's that with the elements, when you have any kind of conditions like that, it's any man's game, especially because I don't think Oregon State's as bad as they've been in the past, but, you know, you got to win. It wasn't pretty. And we, you know, we came back home or got back home and went back out on the road, but got a W, and that's what you need to do at the end of the day. And Joe Williams is crucial. I mean, I don't know if we would have been able to do it without him, because literally we didn't have anybody. They're putting Corey Butler Bird back there to get some carries as well. But, you know, I do say this, I like the adjustment they made. They said, you know, when we had the Oregon State game, they were just running him a bunch, and they could tell in the third and fourth quarter he started to get tired, you know, and who wouldn't not get tired when you've only had 3 days of practice? But I like what they did with the UCLA game. They would put him out two or three snaps at a time. And Zach Moss got a couple carries in there. Looks like he's not 100% yet, but they got him kind of in there, and they used Corey Butler-Bird again. But I really liked how they made sure he had, you know, enough energy to go for the second half. But yeah, you said it, Joe Williams.
Yeah, and as we touched on it, we were unable to do the show last week. Life happens, and you know, for whatever reason, Joe ended up retiring. You did mention his. You know, just a little bit background of his family life going on, but life happens, and sometimes these things aren't as important as they can be, as the fans would like them to be, because we sometimes it matters more to us in those situations. But what he did last week at UCLA is miraculous. That doesn't happen for somebody who has been playing all season, let alone someone who was out of practice for a long time. It's just so bizarre. Call it whatever you will. You got to give credit where it's due. I saw it today. It was Joe's last touchdown of the day, basically the one that sealed the game. And Garrett Bowles just pulling and just wrecking, getting through that interior of the defensive line and just wrecking the linebacker on the block there. So it was I got distracted watching Monday Night Football. Brock Osweiler just threw one of the ugliest passes I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he's a sun devil. So what do you expect?
Hey, oh, there it is. That's for next show, right? But no, the offensive line has been fantastic. And that Oregon State game, usually in elements like that, that's always going to a high percentage of the time going to benefit the home team. And for a while there, it looked like Oregon State was going to pull it off, but you just never know what's going to happen. So, you know, the Utes pulling out these close games. But man, I can tell you, if Josh Rosen was the one throwing for 500 yards, I would have predicted a blowout for UCLA. I can't believe that. That was just a crazy football game. I did not catch most of it. As I was driving home from Idaho Falls, I was up in Boise for the game and then drove to Idaho Falls on Friday and hung out with a good friend of mine. And then I wasn't able to catch the first half of the Utes game, but good thing there was a lot of scoring because it made it a 5-hour game and I was able to catch some of it when I got back into town. But just an incredible football play, incredible football player, Joe Williams, crazy story. Hasn't been too much nationally because of everything else going on, but like you mentioned, I'm confident that there will be plenty of national recognition this week with Corso, Herbie, and the guys coming into town.
Yeah, man. I didn't touch too much on the UCLA, but I mean, it was just, you know, one thing I want to say about Joe Williams. This is when I tweeted out, and obviously a lot of BYU fans came after me after Joe announced he was retiring, but I tweeted out earlier that I was going to take Joe Williams based off of what I saw over Jamal. And I'm not saying that that's the case still or that that's the case now. I'm just – this is the Jamal – or this is the Joe that I think you fans expected to see. Maybe not 300-plus yards in a game, but he was looking
like the Joe – No one would have
like
expected 300 yards and 4 touchdowns.
No. But, I mean, he looked like the Joe that ended the season last year. He was running hard. He hit the holes. He wasn't dancing. And then that 4.3 speed just hit up. And let's say also this. The offensive line, the first couple of weeks, did not perform well at all. They looked pretty bad. They weren't looking like the offensive line that they are now. And like you said, Garrett Bowles, I think something came out from Pro Football Focus rating him as the number one offensive tackle all of college football. So, I mean, he's just blowing up. He's a nasty man, and everything's starting to be figured out. Even with their fourth string center, he started to figure things out. No false starts last week. You can give credit to Joe, and I'm going to give a lot of credit to Joe, but you really have to look at that offensive line and say, hey, they got their stuff together. Those pulling blocks that they do is just – It's remarkable to see how they do it, and they do it so well. Him and Asiata have played really well, but yeah, you said that game was interesting. Started off with the opening kickoff being taken back for a touchdown. You know, Corey Butler, where it takes it 99 yards.
Yeah.
Dude's going to stop. They score again. And then UCLA starts passing and passing because the first couple possessions they're running and they realize, hey, we can't do it. We're not running really well against this team. And they're missing one of their linebackers. They're missing Marcus Williams, who's rated as one of, if not the best safety in the Pac-12, if one of the best and one of the best in the country. So they picked on him. They picked on, I think it's Jordan Fogel, who ended up having a pretty good game himself. But yeah, they threw it 70 times, which is Washington State like. It's crazy to see how many times they threw it. And the Utes, after their defense was talking about, I can't remember who it was, if it was a coach or a player, but they said, we threw in all kinds of disguises and blitzes, similar to what they did with what's his face? It's that the number one overall draft pick from Cal last year. Can't remember his name, but Goff. They you know, similar things. And he said he whatever they threw at him, he figured it out. And you know you could say if Josh Rosen was there and he throws 500 yards, maybe it's a different outcome. But from at least the Utah defense, they said they threw a lot of different things at him, and he was one of the best quarterbacks they played all year, if not the best. So, interesting game. I wouldn't have predicted a 52-45 win. And I don't think anybody, I think Vegas over under
47. Yeah, I don't know if anybody would have. Hopefully no one betted on that game, because that spread was supposed to be two defenses and just plugging it out in the trenches there. And completely different team from what BYU saw at their home opener this year, where BYU could not get any push in the trenches. That was one of Jamal's worst games of the season. And Josh Rosen looked really good in that game as well. Hard-fought game. Obviously, it was 17-14. And this is what we mentioned in our preview of the season, our episode when we previewed the season, is that once we get into late October, we have no idea what teams are going to look like. We had no idea. Nobody had any idea that Colorado, Washington State, and Utah would be the top three teams in the Pac-12 at this time. I don't know. Maybe those red-goggled Utah fans thought they may have been number one.
But I knew it.
Yeah, you did. You keep sipping that Kool-Aid, all right?
I will.
Kool-Aid man plowing through your wall. No, and Utah's having a great season for sure, but I would have expected – I even said UCLA was more bound for the playoff this season than Washington was. You just can't
predict
things like
that.
Yeah, absolutely. And you can't predict a guy retiring and coming back. He's totally Michael Jordaning everything right now. He's number 23 too, right? Isn't he?
No, that's I think that's Moss. He's 28, or that was Armand Shine was 23. So 28. But I mean, yeah, you said it, and I will say this: I don't want to make excuses. Every team goes through injuries, but I mean that Utah was playing defense with a third of their starting defense gone. The injuries that Utah has been more than I can remember in a long time. So the fact that they were able to go out there without their All-American safety, without a linebacker who was playing okay, but you know they're pretty thin in the linebacking position, without Kylie Fitz, Hatfield got hurt and was out for a little bit of it. I mean, the resilience that they could show and to keep pulling out these close games with the injuries that they've faced, and you know it. It shows what type of team they are, and these games are close, but they've been through so many close ones that, you know, that's the difference in coaching. Is good coaches can find ways to win these close games, and Utah's
shot
got the
fired.
Deck. Hey, no shot fired, because I think Kalani is a great coach. So don't get that. I just think he's learning still, their coaching staff is really, really inexperienced. So no shots fired. I do think Kalani is the man down there, and I think he's going to have things turn around. He's just inexperienced as a head coach. But I just think, you know, Kyle's been doing it for a long time, and the depth, obviously, the depth is huge, especially with all the injuries. They've been able to help. If this was 4 years ago, Utah would be probably, a 2-3 win team right now, if I'm being honest, with the injuries that they faced.
They really are coming into their own. And they even missed a bowl game their first two seasons of the Pac-12, if I remember correctly.
Or
maybe
after
it was
first season.
They sandwiched it. Yeah.
Yep.
And so, you know, the experience is definitely one thing. And, you know, I don't blame Kalani at all for that game up in Boise. And, you know, we were talking about running backs and how amazing Joe Williams has been. Jamal Williams right now, it was surprising not to see him on the field. He, you know, re-aggravated his ankle in pregame warm-ups. But right now he still sits at fourth overall in total yards in the country, and he missed a game.
Which is pretty crazy.
Yeah, no, it's – and there are those – it's funny. You mentioned the tweet about Joe Williams being the better running back. When Joe got over 300 yards, I got a text from somebody saying that very thing. And it was just – they were just trolling me, of course, because that's what happens to me. It just follows me wherever I go. But, no, it's you know, crazy stuff going on at Utah. Big matchup. Hopefully they can put things together and build off of that momentum of these two close games, because they have got to be ready for the Huskies, who look really – really good, and BYU needs to get healthy in this bye week. Being up in Boise wasn't, you know, wasn't too bad. The field doesn't hurt your eyes as much in person as it does when you watch it on TV. So I was grateful for that. And but that was just such a frustrating game. I'm so sick of everything just going down to the wire. I can't handle it anymore, man. I'm done. I say that, and I'm not really done, but it's just I couldn't handle it. It was another crazy football game. It had just about everything. Those two sixes, Fred Warner towing the sidelines. But I do want to mention your tweet with the picture of Boise State's crazy straight lines that they have there, which probably allowed him to tow that, which was pretty funny. But
Boise, right? What do you expect?
Oh gosh, for real, serious. And their fans. We were talking about this before we hopped on the air tonight. But everything that anyone in both fan bases has heard about Boise State fans is absolutely correct. I even had my 5-year-old with me, and they were yelling at him because he was wearing a BYU hat. It was pretty awful. Both fan bases would say that Boise State fans are approaching BYU or Utah awful fan levels. So it was a fun game. Stadium was, it wasn't so bad. It was, you know, fun to be there. Crazy game. Missed Jamal, but the story of the game obviously was Taysom Hill, his inability to read, to make reads and make decisions to lead his team to win. When your defense is getting 5 turnovers and you're not winning, that's 2 games now. Utah and Boise State. Lost by 1 point, and your defense is getting 4 or 5 turnovers. And our defense scored more points than our offense did. We definitely really need this bye week to get fresh and get ready for Cincinnati.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to play, you know, what if Jamal would have been there? And I do think if Jamal probably would have been there, I think BYU probably walks away with the W, because he is right now their offense. But I mean, yeah, I didn't get to finish the game. I'll be honest. It was getting late. I know. But here's the thing is it's hard, because I feel like with Mississippi State, I thought Taysom was a big reason why they won the game, with his ability to escape the pocket and do things with his legs. And then you go to this game and his inabilities show up as we've seen throughout the year with throwing the ball and even some pocket decisions, you know, deciding whether he should run or whether he should still try to sit back and wait for his receivers to get open. You know, and right now you're already past the point where it's like, you're not going to put Tanner in because you're already past those tough games. For the most part, the rest of the games should be pretty, you know, I would imagine easy wins for BYU. But,
I hope so.
I touched it. a little bit about the experience. I think Kalani is going to be a great coach down there. He's inexperienced some things. Now, I don't know if it was his call or not, but the 4th and 19 punt out of the own fake punt out of the end zone. He says it was, his call. I don't know if it was, but yeah, I mean, those types of things you just wouldn't be doing as you get experience, and I think BYU is going to be fine with the coaching staff. Now we'll see, I don't want to just always go to next year, but it's hard when I look at this schedule. I feel like maybe Cincinnati might be a tough game, but Southern Utah, UMass, and Utah State doesn't even, that was a game maybe I was worried about before the season. They don't.
Oh, they're awful.
At all. So
they're pretty awful.
I almost try to look forward to next season because obviously BYU's, if they go to a bowl game, what are they at right now? They have 4 wins.
Yeah, so
I think
they'll
go
get
to a
6
game.
For sure. Yeah.
And it's hard because they're going to play a Mountain West Conference team most likely. So I like to look a little bit next year. I think Tanner's going to come in. Their offense is going to be improved. But let's say this. I'm not going to put all the blame on Taysom because the wide receivers in that game dropped pass after pass and they weren't doing him any favors. And I don't know what it is, if it's just the a newer wide receiver core or maybe it is the loss of a good experienced coach and Guy Holliday, who's turned around the Utah receiving core remarkably well in his first year. I don't know if it's a combination of things, but yeah, the wide receivers did not do anything to
Taysom Hill.
Taysom. Thank you.
Come on, man.
You got to help him out. And if Tanner's back there, maybe things are different, but they're probably going to still drop balls as well. So it's
you
a
know,
tough situation.
Here's what I think it is. It's been 8 games now, a rough 8-game stretch. Taysom hasn't been delivering the ball very well all season. And as a receiving core, you start to lose confidence that he's going to be able to. And I'm going to make a baseball reference. You might not know what I'm talking about, but Aroldis Chapman, the closer for the Cubs right now, who are in the World Series, by the way, congratulations to all the Cubs fans out there. You made it. You're 4 wins away, but congrats. You're there. Aroldis Chapman throws 103, 101 miles per hour, which is insane. He's the fastest pitcher, has the fastest arm in baseball, and the catcher doesn't always catch the ball. It's if you throw fast, but you're wild, the person on the other end has no idea where the ball is going to be, and they don't have that much time to adjust from their hands being above their head to catching it at their hip because it's coming in so fast at such a frozen rope angle. It's hard to make that adjustment in such little time. And 8 games in, the receivers, I think, are still trying to figure out how to catch Taysom's passes. Every single one is just an absolute bullet. He has absolutely no touch and he just can't deliver like he should, deliver the football like he should. He's not dropping them in there. And I swear, every time he throws to Mitchell Juergens, that dude has to lay out. And he made an incredible catch at the goal line, which was very reminiscent of the way they beat Boise State last year on that Hail Mary. But there was another one in the fourth quarter where Mitchell had to, he had to absolutely lay out again and it hit his fingertips. But Taysom is not putting his receivers in good opportunities to catch the football. And I think 8 games in, it's just getting to be too much mentally for them. And they're getting tired of it. You can see their body language on that final drive. Taysom escaped the pocket and he had Moroni Laulupeutu wide open and the ball hit him 3 yards in front of him. It hit the ground 3 yards in front of him. It's just, as a wide receiver, you're taught that if it touches your hands, you can catch the ball. But it's coming in so fast, and it's just been – it's been 8 games. It's the same thing, and there's no adjustment from Taysom to work on that touch. You get a little bit overwhelmed and frustrated, and that affects your confidence as a receiving core in the guy who's delivering the football. That's what I think the issue is. Sure, there's a little bit of blame. You got to catch it. There was one ball that Nick Kurtz should have caught for a touchdown. It was a ridiculous drop. Other than that, it's Taysom, man. And anybody who argues otherwise is just trying to do all they can to defend him because they love him. He's an easy guy to like. Everybody wants him to succeed. But man, you got to go with Tanner Mangum. There's no way that he is this worse at making reads and delivering the football like he should than Taysom is.
You know, it's I partially agree with you, and it's hard to say because they're two different style quarterbacks. There's been a lot of times where BYU's offensive line has had really good games, and there's been a lot of times where they've given up a lot of pressure. And so the ability for Taysom to get out of the pocket and for defenses to have to respect the run makes it very difficult for defenses to just – let's just say if Taysom wasn't back there and it was Tanner, the box wouldn't be as stacked. Now, Jamal's tearing it up,
no
obviously
doubt.
They got to worry about him, but
right.
People have to almost put someone on Taysom to respect the run. And I'm not trying to stick up for either one. I don't have a dog in the fight. I don't care. But I just think, hey, there's another part of this. You got to think about as a fan is what Taysom's legs make defenses do in respecting him and how they game plan. And if Taysom's not back there, those passing lanes that maybe are open for Taysom might not be back there for Tanner because now they're dropping someone else back. You know what I mean? So, I mean, there's a lot that goes, I don't disagree with you in the fact that I don't think Taysom's not a good thrower at all because he's, you know, he can rocket it in there. He's got a good arm, but he has no touch. And I think Tanner's a much better pro style quarterback who'd fit this system a lot better. You know, maybe Taysom should have been the man with the old system, you know, the hurry up and go and spread out. He fits that a lot better, but it's hard. It's hard to look back at the BYU. If you're a BYU fan, to go back and say the what ifs of if Tanner's playing in these, but the coaching staff made that decision, and we aren't there in practice. We weren't there in fall camp, and you know, hopefully it was because they thought he was the better player, and not because he giving him the I'm a senior, I'm coming back fighting adversity, giving him that kind of pass, you know.
Yeah, no, and the offensive line's been fine. There were games where they've struggled, but Taysom's had 3-4 seconds to make his reads and make a decision on if he's going to escape the run or throw the ball, and that's where he hesitates, and that's what's frustrating is you would think that a senior quarterback would know when to make the right decisions, and he's not. And it could be a scheme issue. When BYU's in the hurry-up, they do great. That's when Taysom excels. But you're exactly right, and that's probably an issue, definitely. But shout out to Squally Canada. He played really well. He carried the ball 21 times for 88 yards. There were some runs where I said to myself, man, if that was Jamal, he would have shook that tackler and gotten another 15 mm-hmm. yards after. But Squally played well. Didn't know he was going to get the starts, and he didn't look bad. The defense was awesome after those first two. Ridiculous drives by Boise State. The defense was great. Fred Warner got another pick six, which means he's had a pick six in every game he's played against Boise State in Boise for his career. And then Fred, he stripped a ball, and his brother Troy recovered it. That was cool to see. Dane Lake got a pick six. So the defense, I've been really impressed with the defensive adjustments by Coach Tuiaki, and I'm sure Coach Guilford has a lot to do with it because they're causing a lot of turnovers. They give up a lot of yards, but they're doing what they need to do to shut teams out. Even against Mississippi State, when they gave up two touchdowns, they shut them out the rest of the way until overtime. So defense is playing well. Offensive line is playing well enough for Taysom to succeid. But no, this is a much-needed bye week. Hopefully everybody can get fresh. Jamal can come back. Hopefully we'll see Louis Lapajo. But another heartbreaker, another one-point loss. That's four losses by a total of 8 points, which is just ridiculous. But, the percentage to win out is high. But I won't touch on the Cincinnati game, obviously, as we'll get into that next week. Because we've got something bigger this week. It's big time, you fans. It's big time.
Right. I think it's queuing up right now. We got some game day music going on. Doesn't this get you excited, even if you're a BYU fan?
No.
Just college game day in general. Just that show.
I was thinking about showing up.
Top notch.
with a BYU sign, but I don't want to be that guy because I hope I'll get in a fight with someone.
Did you see me, though? We tweeted out, hey, don't be the guy who comes with the BYU sucks sign. Like, let's keep the, towards the game at hand. And there's going to be someone that will do it. But I think majority of Utah fans are behind us and saying, hey, let's keep it towards the game that's here. I saw some BYU fan tweet out, hey, we should get as many people as we can dressed up as Ute fans and make signs that make no sense or the spelling errors. So hopefully,
that would be awesome. I'd be down for that.
Hey, you would be. But here, I'm sticking up for you guys and saying don't come out and be a BYU sucks guy.
Oh, no doubt. I would never do that. It's funny that he mentioned that, but the reality of actually, like, if I showed up and I'm like, wow, am I actually doing this? I would feel awful about myself as a human being.
You don't have too much time, right?
I may not watch it. I'm going to try to go golfing one last time before the weather cools down. It's a bye week. I usually do that as a tradition every year, as a bye week, is try to hit up the golf course. Maybe I'll catch you. I don't know. We'll see. It's exciting. My favorite all-time game day quote, though, by Lee Corso is, this is not as great as Provo. I believe that was when TCU came to town a few years ago and thumped you.
Let's not remember that.
Cougar fans know what that's like. That was 2009 for us when game day was here and we got destroyed by the Horned Frogs. But, yeah, man, game day, it's a big deal. And it's huge.
It's
a ball game.
It's crazy.
Hasn't it been three in a row now?
No. I think we had it last year with Cal and this year. And I think this year will be more exciting because the opponent that's coming in. But it's always fun. I mean, just to think of the signs. And I try to think of one. Last year I did one, but I'm trying to think if I'm going to go this year and do one. But I saw someone tweet out a sign. I don't know who it was, but I wish I could give him proper credit. But I think it was the Dalai Lama on Twitter, who does some great work for the Utes. But he said one of his game day signs was Arizona State sold a signal. Oh, what was it? Shoot, I'm a slaughter. It was something about Arizona State, and I was laughing so hard when I saw it. Killed me. Now I'm not going to be able to find it, but something about Arizona State. Todd Graham stole my other sign.
I saw that. That's awesome. That's a good one.
I just love it. We'll see if Utah can actually have some good signs this year. Yeah, they kind of had some bad ones.
Wasn't there one last season that they did have a spelling error?
Yeah, the one about Marshawn Lynch.
Oh yeah.
Got slammed. Yep.
Yeah. So, you fans do a spell check. Go to Google and type words. Make sure. Or get your sign for free if you're paying someone to do it. But it's big time opponents. You've mentioned this is Troy Williams' revenge game. Man, Washington, top four team right now. It doesn't get any better than this. In the must, it's just going to be electric on Saturday.
Yeah,
game
day makes it even more electric. It's 1:30. So afternoon game.
Fox,
right? FS1. So
FS1. Okay.
1:30 FS1. Yeah, you said it. It's the game day is going to make it more electric, I think. This game is interesting to me. These teams are very, very, in a way, very similar. They're both very balanced teams. Jake Browning, this team is very similar to the team Utah beat last year. Just Jake Browning has one more year of experience as he was a freshman last year, and his efficiency this year is out the door. Yards are very similar to Troy Williams. You know, they're not, but the separation is the touchdowns and interceptions. He's putting touchdowns. You know, he's getting a lot of touchdowns. Their defense is stout. They are going to make, especially with the last two games, they're going to make Utah beat them by the pass because they know Joe Williams can run, and they're gonna key on that, and which makes it very interesting for Troy, being that he's already come out and said that he wants to put up video game like numbers. So, Troy, I love to see the confidence. I love the whole Troy Williams X factor because this is his former team, but now you got to do it. You know what I mean? You got to come out and do it. And I think I think it's possible. Now, the thing with Washington is how bad they haven't played anybody. When the teams that they've played, they've beat pretty handily, except for Arizona, which is another, hey, here's an alarm in my head saying, okay, maybe this team isn't what they are ranked at fourth. But every other team they've played, they've beat, and they beat soundly, without question, you know, whereas Utah's had close games. But they haven't played anybody. Their strength of schedule is as far as in my rankings, there's only one team ahead of them that has a worse strength of schedule, and that's because they have one extra win. Other than that, they have the worst strength of schedule in the top 25 easily, and because they just haven't played anybody. So it's, now that's not to say that they can't be the fourth ranked team. I think they can, and I respect where they are right now in the rankings, but they got to go out and beat someone. They haven't played too many road games. The atmosphere might be able to get to them. And, you know, it's a tough one. These teams match up very similar wise. And, but Utah, they can't come out and, they can't afford to do what they did with USC as far as giving them a lead to spot the game, or Arizona. They can't do that with Washington. And, you know, if Marcus Williams is back, I feel confident, or I feel more confident, especially in if Sonia Tauteole is back as a linebacker, I'd feel more confident. But if those two guys are missing, which I'm putting a high probability that they are, it definitely puts me gets me a little bit more worried, and not as confident for a Utah win.
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned the strength of schedule. I was actually pulling that up as you said that. Utah's isn't much better. Utah's at 43 right now. Washington's at 49 as far as strength of schedule.
Well, what are you looking at here?
It is it's teamrankings.com, strength of schedule.
Okay. So I was going off of the Sagarin rankings.
Oh,
so
okay.
Utah's 52 in the Sagarin rankings. Washington's 85.
Interesting.
So I guess
okay.
It depends on what you go at. And Utah hasn't played anything much better, but you look at it, they've played a USC team that's good. They played the same Arizona team.
Well,
Oregon State,
yeah,
they both played. But UCLA is probably a little bit better than the next team.
Honestly,
that they played. So Oregon's
horrible.
Stanford's not that good.
Well, I think that Utah playing BYU in their out-of-conference probably pushes their strength of schedule above Washington's. Rutgers, Idaho, and Portland State isn't too much more impressive than Southern Utah and San Jose State, but the fact that they played BYU out of conference probably pushes them above. But their in-conference schedule, they're very similar. USC is really good. Cal is questionable. Arizona's terrible. Oregon State's terrible. UCLA is not really very good anymore because they're injured. Stanford is weird. I can't figure them out. They're not good. Oregon's not good. Oregon State isn't good. Arizona's awful. So this will definitely be Washington's toughest matchup. It'll be Utah's toughest matchup as well. But like you said,
yeah,
I think playing BYU and USC gives them the edge, of course, in that competition level this season. So they might be a little bit more ready for that because they've experienced it.
And that's what I think it is. I think it's the BYU game definitely adds into it. And USC, especially the way USC's been playing now.
And the Huskies still have to play
Arizona, they both played. What was that?
They still have to play USC in a couple of weeks also. So they've got them coming up.
They do. And then obviously their last game with Arizona State's no slouch. I mean, they're not great, but they're right there with the possibility that they could make some noise with in the South as far as maybe disrupting some things. But yeah, I mean, And then they had the Washington State game to close up the year, which is looking a lot better than it did at the beginning of the year. So
that game's looking like it's going to be awesome.
I can't say Utah's schedule is much better, but no, I mean, I think for the Sagarin rankings, they're saying, hey, as far as the Pac-12 games they've played, they've actually played some decent opponents. And it's not their fault, you know. The strength is, you know, they schedule these things out. I mean, years in advance, and who would have thought that Oregon and Stanford, who were supposed to be two good opponents, would be where they are right now, you know?
Well, and UCLA was supposed to be good, too. I know you guys just hung with them and beat them by a touchdown, but they're having a tough year as well. You didn't know Josh Rosen was going to be down by the time you guys played them. So it's those are the things you can't prepare for. You don't have control over. All you have control over is one week at a time. And Kyle Whittingham does a good job of making sure his players keep that mindset.
And that's what it's going to be. So I mean, you know, they're 10-point dog right now.
I thought it was 7. I didn't know
it was
11.
It went down to. So it started, opened up at 11, gotcha. 11 and a half, and then went to 10. So it's kind of gone down a little bit, but I mean, the last time I think Utah was this big of a dog at home, and I could be wrong, was when number 5 Stanford came into town, and then Utah beat them. I think they were two touchdown dogs in that game.
Weren't they dogs last year against Michigan? In that open,
they weren't too. I think they were no more than like 3 or 4.
Yeah.
You know, not anywhere like where it's an 11-point or 2-touchdown one like Stanford. So, you know, that bodes well for Utah. Just playing, they always play well with their backs to the wall, and an environment. If we get into our predictions here, unless you had anything else you wanted to touch on, but.
Yeah, you did mention Jake Browning and Troy Williams' stats are similar. They are, except Jake Browning has 26 touchdown passes with 2 interceptions.
Yep.
He is incredibly efficient.
Yeah.
He spreads the ball around as well. He's got 2 receivers who both have close to 500 yards. And
yeah, really good receivers.
One has 34 catches, the other is 27. Big play team. That's what Utah needs to limit is the big plays, and that'll put them in a good position to be there in the fourth quarter.
Exactly. Yeah. Limit the big plays. Don't give, don't spot any points to Washington. And then win the turnover battle. It's a big thing. If they can win the turnover battle and set themselves up. And, the one thing that they always need to improve on, which they've still struggled with all year, is scoring touchdowns in the red zone. You can't go, you know, you can't settle for field goals. You know, if you have to do it, you do it, but get touchdowns in the red zone. You got to finish your drives.
Absolutely. You got to capitalize on those opportunities against a team like this or, you know, like an Oregon State. You can get away with not taking control of opportunities that you're given because that team just they're just not very talented, not very good. You can't do that against this Washington team or you're not really going to be in a good spot to win the game at the end.
Yep. I agree. You don't have the window for making mistakes is very small against a team like this. So
right.
With that being said, at the beginning of the year,
let's do it.
I picked, well, for last week I had Utah with a loss at UCLA. So they got a win where they weren't going to, in my mind. And I think I'm going to probably flip flop. I had Washington as a win earlier in the year and Arizona State then after their bye as a loss. And I think I might flip flop those. I can't in good mindset say that Utah is going to win this game. I don't think it's impossible. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Utah won this game. I think it's going to be really close. But I think if I could tell you for sure that we had Marcus Williams back, you know, and a healthy defense, and then maybe I probably sway and sway my vote back towards Utah. But at this point in time, I think this is a loss, and it's going to be a close one. But like I said, I wouldn't be surprised if Utah does win this game at all. I do think they match up okay with them, but this Washington team is as good as they are. We don't know much about them because they still haven't played anyone. And I think the environment in Rice Eccles is going to give them some fits. But at the end of the day, you know, I think Utah's just not healthy enough to compete or at least pull this game out. I think they'll compete, but just not pull this win out. So I have it like a 38-35 for Washington.
Looking at Washington's games, they haven't scored less than 35 points all season. That actually came against Arizona. You can't predict things based on what's happened in previous games too much. But I agree with you. I think Washington has such high firepower. be ready because they haven't played a team like this all year who has playmakers, multiple playmakers at both wide receiver and running back. And Jake Browning just tears defenses up. He does not turn the ball over. A 26-2 touchdown to interception ratio is just incredibly ridiculous. That's EA Sports type stuff. I don't think Utah's gonna just bow down either. They're gonna be right there. I know they're gonna compete, but I'm with you. I can't feel good about myself predicting Utah getting this upset at home. And usually it's weird saying upset at home, but that's what it would be, honestly. I know there's a lot of U fans out there who have high expectations, who will slam the Cougar fan for saying stuff like that. But, you know, looking at it from a realist perspective, I think Washington wins this game. I don't think they're going to drop 50. Yeah, I think Utah's D would still be able to limit them on a few drives. But I can see a 38-31. 34-27, something like that. I think they'll cover the spread for sure. I think it'll be less than the 10 points, and who knows what it's going to drop down to by game time Saturday, as it's only Monday night. But, you know, within a touchdown, 38-31, or like a 30-23, something like that, I think Utah, their offense needs to make sure they're not too hyped and not make mistakes, because you can't give Jake Browning a short field and give him more opportunities. There you have it. That was long-winded, I know, but I take the Huskies by touchdown.
Okay. I can understand where you're coming from. So, you know, I tossed around with this a little bit, but, you know, I think I'm going to flip-flop, and I think Utah will go on the road after their bye, get Arizona State. And maybe lose this one, but I wouldn't be surprised. So let's take a quick break here, and then we'll get into the rest of our show here. We got some rankings, and then Jazz and some college basketball talk. So we'll be back here after this quick message. All right, welcome back in. I appreciate it. Once again, the J&J podcast coming to you on a Monday night, the 24th of October. Let's dive into it. We didn't get to touch on rankings last week, obviously, with not doing a show, but let's get into it here. We'll go through this quickly.
Yeah,
there's going to be some surprises, so we'll see. We'll see how you feel about it. But number 25 is South Florida.
Okay, I can see that.
They got the 6 wins and have a higher strength of schedule than Washington. Number 24 is Arizona State.
That's kind of surprising.
They're hanging in there. And they're hanging in there with their strength of schedule. They're number 25 right now. And then number 23 is another fellow team who they ended up just losing to, Washington State, comes in at number 23. It looks like they're turning things around a little bit right now. So
they are playing good
I think they're just outside the top 25 right now, if I'm not mistaken.
They are currently receiving votes.
Yep.
They
were
26th right now if it went further. Yeah.
Okay. So that's what I thought. LSU comes in at number 22. They've started to turn things around a little bit. Another SEC team comes in at number 21, Auburn. The big upset of the week, number 20, Penn
SMU?
State.
Oh, Penn
no,
State. Okay, State. Okay.
Penn State comes in with their win over Ohio State. And then Utah's opponent this week, number 19, is Washington. The rankings, just like I said, they don't like them because of their strength of schedule. They're ranked 85th. They'll jump up after the rest of their schedule is getting a little bit tougher. So they'll start jumping up, and if they keep winning, they'll climb easily into that top 5 range. Number 18 is Oklahoma after their crazy game against Texas Tech. All that offense was crazy. I don't know if you saw it, but it was nuts. Number 17, Oklahoma, Texas Tech.
Oh, that game was ridiculous. Absolutely.
Reminded me of the Oklahoma State Texas Tech game a few years back. You don't remember?
I don't know if I recall that one.
It was a while back. Number 17, Arkansas. Number 16, Florida State. Number 15, Wisconsin.
Okay.
Number 14, Tennessee. And a team that stays in these rankings, and a lot of people were giving us a hard time. Number 13, Western Michigan.
Western Michigan, still undefeated.
So they're the only team that has a worse strength of schedule in this top 25. They're just up there because they have one more win. So I looked at it. If Washington was 8-0 and they didn't have their bye already, they would be up in the top 8 somewhere. So just so you know. Number 12 is Louisville. Number 11, the Nebraska Cornhuskers. Number 10, the Ohio State. Yeah, they're doing really well. Their strength of schedule is one of the worst ones in the top 25 as well. So they definitely haven't benefited from having a pretty soft schedule as well. So number 10 is Ohio State. Number 9, opponent of BYU's, West Virginia. Number 8, last week's opponent for BYU, Boise State. So they've climbed up. They were they're after that BYU game, their strength of schedule went up quite a bit. So the computer really likes BYU.
That BYU
as
game
a tough
big
schedule.
Yeah.
Number 7,
game of the year this season.
Oh yeah, for sure. And I don't think they'll lose the rest of the year. Number 7, the Buffalo of Colorado.
For a second, I was like, Buffalo? What are you talking? Oh, okay, gotcha.
The Bills.
See you.
The Buffalo Bills.
The Buffaloes. Not
yes,
the Buffalo Bulls out of the Sun Belt.
No. Number 6, the Tar Heels, North Carolina. And a lot of people that are thinking that this will be a rankings that I put in my own personal bias will think this is crazy. But number 5 is the Utes.
Wow.
They come in there.
That blows me away because their strength of schedule is not that good.
Well, once again, it depends on what you're looking at, but they do come in at 52nd. 52nd. So, no, it's not great. It's not at this point at the level of BYU what they faced. And but
there's no way Nebraska should be below them in those rankings.
But who is Nebraska beat? I mean, I don't have
they're undefeated.
Yes, but
they have zero losses.
Is 72. Their strength of schedule. And
Illinois, Indiana, Purdue, Northwestern, and Oregon. But
that's
no different than Cal, it's not much different than Utah's schedule, honestly. But I don't know. Keep going. Let's finish this off.
So number 4 is Michigan. Number 3, Texas A&M. Number 2, Clemson. And then obviously number 1, Alabama.
Roll Tide.
So yeah, you know, there they are. Like I said, I don't this none of these rankings
start,
are
start
they, I don't put my strength of schedule. I don't do it. It's all off of the Sagarin rankings, whether you like it or not. That's
right.
Where I get the data from. You know, people might not like that. But yeah, I mean that's where it is and it's gonna be different each and every week. And like you said, Washington's gonna start climbing higher and you know, if Utah loses, they'll drop. You know, it's just what it is. So there we have it. We have it just for your sake. BYU comes at 33. They're
at
33.
That's actually surprising with their 4 losses.
I think last week before the game they were ranked at 29th in my schedule or in my ranking. So if they would have won, they would have jumped up in the top 25 easily. So yeah, 33rd. They like their strength of schedule right now. It's still sitting at about a 15. Now they're getting to the point where it's going to start dropping. So, but BYU is going to start winning. So that's going to help.
Yeah, strength of schedule go down a little bit for sure. We should mention that tomorrow night the very first college football playoff rankings will be released as well.
That's right. Which, you know, Utah should be in there, which I think would make it. They've been in every college football ranking since the beginning of the college football. So, hey, you know, got to bring it up, right?
Why wouldn't you, right?
No, yeah. I wouldn't. You know, I wouldn't do anything to...
His losses, West Virginia's a top 10 team. Obviously, Utah's up there.
Boise's up there.
These losses are frustrating, but the games we're winning. Mississippi State is awful. They're at the bottom of the SEC. Michigan State still has yet to win a conference game. They're 2-5. Toledo actually is doing really well. Their quarterback leads the nation in quarterback efficiency, so that's good. But Arizona, they've lost every conference game as well. It's just frustrating. We're so close. The teams we're beating were the teams who aren't relatively very good.
Arizona, Michigan State, Mississippi State, Oregon, you know, Oregon State for Utah, all rank. Oregon State's at 93, Arizona 94, Michigan State 95, and Mississippi State's at 98 in the rankings. Oregon's at 92,
yikes.
So they're not even much better. Utah State ranks out better right now than Oregon. So, pretty crazy. Pretty crazy to see, but
yeah.
So
it's all unfolding. We're approaching November.
That's right. We're almost here, almost to the end of the season, which is crazy. But with that, the end of the season means we have. Where'd it go? There we go. We have the Jazz and the NBA season kicking off tomorrow night.
Tomorrow, it is here. Boy, you guys feel it? You excited? Because I am stoked. I got NBA 2K17. I don't know how to dunk yet on it. It's very difficult. But let's hope that the Jazz don't have any problems dunking, because, man, they are primed for a good year, and it's here. No more of this preseason speculation. The game and the season is here.
Oh, man. I am so excited. I was excited watching some of these preseason games. But yeah, it's finally here. They go on the road.
Preseason.
They get out to Portland. There's only three games on tomorrow night, and two of them are on TNT, and then the Jazz game obviously will be on Roof Sports. But man, it's exciting. I expect some good things. I wish they were healthy. I mean, it sucks they already have Gordon Hayward out, but you know, this is what the Jazz got in their season. Let's prepare for this. You know, when they have injuries.
It's still got Alex out. He's going to miss some time. He's still struggling from that offseason surgery. And Derek Favors didn't play the entire preseason due to some knee issues, which is a problem for big men. He is expected to start tomorrow night. I would imagine that he's going to start over Gordon Hayward. Joe Johnson, maybe?
My guess would be Joe Johnson at this point.
I think it's
yeah, the only
be.
Other thing, yeah, I don't know.
Unless
don't
they go with Joe Ingles, which would be head scratching.
I know, which, you know what, Joe Ingles surprisingly has played really well in the preseason. I'll give him credit. He is a glue guy. He does the right things, but no, I don't think it will be.
Wow.
I think it will be Joe Johnson. I think, you know, because they're not going to put Boris in there at the three. They, you know,
no.
Boris has played okay. But yeah, I think it will be Joe, I would be surprised if it's anybody but Joe. Yeah.
One of the Joes.
Unless they swing open,
JJ.
Which is a possibility. They could put George Hill at the one and put Dante at the two and Rodney at the three. I would surprise me a little bit, but yeah. Yeah.
You don't know. Is it Portland that they're playing tomorrow?
Yep. So they
maybe
go
they
like
will
the
do
small
that.
Ball.
Well, and having Dante Exum guarding CJ or having him, because he's a little bit longer than George Hill, have him guard Dame out of Weber State, and then have George Hill guard CJ McCollum. But I think McCollum's a little bit faster than George Hill is. I mean, I wouldn't hate that. But and honestly, Joe Johnson's a guy who he might even play a little bit of the four this season. He might play the three or the four more than the two based on matchups. And this is where we needed Alec Burks to be healthy. Because Gordon Hayward's out. And, so we'll see. We've got endless variations. I love that about this team. They're going to be able to do that all year. I think they're going to be able to compete with any team because of their matchups, their endless variations of their lineups. They have four guys who can play three or four positions. DL can slide to the three if he needs to as an emergency, I think. Joe Johnson can play the two, three, or the four. I think Dante would be able to match up at the one, two, sometimes the three, depending on the team. And then Trey Lyles could even line up as the three sometimes if we need him to. So it's just that's the thing that excites me the most is the endless variations of the defensive matchups and how this team is going to react to being so interchangeable at literally every single position except for center, of course. That's what I'm excited to see, how Quinn Snyder handles those variations and how the Jazz are able to kick off this season, or sorry, tip off this season with high expectations.
Yeah, the depth that they have is actually ranked one of the highest according to a lot of national outlets. So, you know, they built for this in the off season, and you know it's going to still suck, but you know, not having Hayward and Burks for the beginning of the season, but you know, it's going to be fun to watch and see how they do. I think Joe Johnson, as he gets going, he'll get acclimated to the system. Boris Diaw, I liked what I saw from him out of the preseason. He didn't score a lot, but the way he moves the ball and the way he plays with Rudy, because they've played so long on the national team, I like to watch that. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I don't think they're going to get the win tomorrow night. Just Portland's a tough team. First game on the road, but you know, I have them winning about 54 games as I went through kind of quickly and randomly selected who I thought would win. But you know, 50, that, you know, that's a big improvement from last year. 54 wins is going to get you
14 games would be huge. I looked at it and I saw 74 wins on the schedule.
I see.
No, I didn't. 55 expectation. You have to expect that would put them in a spot to contend for the division. As I believe last year, the Thunder were 55-27 and won the division. And so, yeah, you got to be there. You're winning 55, 56 games. That's a top three, at least top four seed in the playoffs. You know, as we see Gordon Hayward come back, if Alec Burks ever comes back, that's such a disappointing thing. I love Alec Burks. He's got such a sweet shot. But the dude just can't stay healthy, and that's a lot of pressure on Gordon, which is why I'm excited to see what Joe Johnson can do. And right now, Joe Johnson is listed as the starting small forward on the depth chart right now. So, yeah, I would expect George Hill, Rodney Hood, Joe Johnson, to get the start there on the front line. 5 games, I like that. I can see 56-57. Best case scenario, the Jazz can get just at 60 or 61. That is if they end up winning more of those last possession 1-2 point games that they led the NBA in last season. They had more 1-3 point games than any other team in the country. And they were only 1 game out of the playoffs. So they've got the experience in those games. They brought a couple guys in who have the experience, George Hill and Boris Diaw, who has a championship under his belt, to bring the veteran leadership that was missing. That was the only thing missing with this team. I really love how the team has been fashioned.
I agree. So, I mean, I'm with you. I think the expectation is in that 53-57 wins. I forgot to mention a couple of things from some of the interaction we got on the Twitter handle, but we asked, you know, what position, if any, do you predict the Jazz to finish in the West? The Forge at the Forge Burn put down third seed in the playoffs is where he expects. I think that's possible, but I think more in that 4-5 range is where I expect them to be. In that range. So yeah, it's gonna be fun, man. It's been a long time coming to be excited for a Jazz season. So
I'm excited, man. I drafted Derek Favors in my fantasy team on Sunday night. It's full throttle basketball season. And in a couple weeks, college basketball starts.
That is right. I need to cue that up. Let's cue it. College basketball right here. Okay. With that being said, we had a little bit of a preview. The Cougars had their boom shaka laka, whatever they call it.
And they really struggled.
Yeah, you know, I haven't heard it since NBA Jam.
Struggled more. Jeff saying boom shakalaka or BYU Sports Nation not broadcasting boom shakalaka.
Ooh.
But they broadcast the Big 12 press conference. Come
on. Yeah, there's something wrong there.
There is. That's our version of come on, man.
Major 12 network right broadcasted Utah's scrimmage, and they brought out, you know, game by game analysis. You know, BYU should be able to do all this. They should be able to really record all their practices and just put them on BYU TV because they have that capability. I don't know why you wouldn't.
The Pac-12 may have shown those practices, but just as many people saw those as they did BYU's shakalaka the other
night. No, stop. I didn't go to the game. I watched the Pac-12.
And that wasn't a slam on the Utes at all. That's just a slam on how awful it is to try to find the Pac-12 network anywhere. It's just a hassle to get. But no, you're absolutely right.
It's bad, but it's not that bad.
You're right. It's
only DirecTV.
Absolutely laughable that BYU Sports Nation doesn't broadcast that, or the spring game for BYU football. Every team's spring game is broadcast somewhere, everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So you know they've got to take advantage of that. Sports are going to get, and I know they don't care about ratings and viewership. I'm sure they care about viewership. They don't care about making money, but you've got to broadcast those things. That's just, yeah, awful. Anyway.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. Yeah. I mean, and the other thing I saw online with, was the outline of how they did for the fans that were there at the BYU Boom Shakalaka event. They didn't like the setup. So I don't know. Hard to get a read, but I know you as a BYU fan is excited for this season and looking forward to it. Anything
oh,
you heard
for this
or saw?
Season. No, I know Kyle Collinsworth was there and he periscoped the Boom Shakalaka on his Twitter. I saw a couple clips here and there. It was hard to get a read on anything. All I saw on Twitter was how disappointed everybody was that they didn't get to see it. Me and myself, I've never really been that big of a fan of it. Even last season, it was really just a snooze fest. The best players didn't participate in the dunk contest or the three-point shootout or the scrimmage or anything like that. It's seriously no different than a spring game where in football where the best players are sitting out. But it's a little bit different because you like to see the depth of the football team get those reps in, you know, basically in game. It's not the same for basketball for me. I can't get into preseason basketball for whatever reason. It's just not interesting. And last year they brought in Jeff Goodman of CBS. Where is he at? I better not botch that. He is the author of the book The System, The Glory and Scandal, Time College Football. Boy, you got LDS guy. Brought him in and a couple other people to judge the dunk contest, and it was just awful. So I'm not a fan. I'm going to get killed for slamming on it. It's my own team's thing. But no, it's just I can't get on board. I am excited for the season. I want to see what he's going to surprise people. Everyone's heard of Haas, Emery, and Mika, but I think Elijah Bryan is going to be the one surprising people this season.
Well, you know, you said it. For me, I couldn't have a more of a maybe an opposite approach from it. I look forward to just, I mean, maybe this year and more in particular, because they have 12 new guys on the team. And so I wanted to see what, you know, what each player kind of had. I know you don't expect a lot because they're not going to show a lot. Defenses know each other. You know, the defense knows how to play each player because they do it every day in practice. But what I learned, you know, quickly as I digest this, there are a couple things. Kyle Kuzma is going to be good. He's going to be improved and he's going to lead this team. But the two guys that they can't get until mid to end December, David Collette, you know, the former Spartan, one of my former players, and then Cedric Bearfield, the SMU transfer, who's the point guard. Those two guys will be number two and three on this team as far as the best players, and they're not going to get them until right before the Diamond Head Classic. So I really liked what I saw out of them. David Collette looked like he's the most physical of the big man. I thought I'd see a little bit more out of Jace Johnson, the redshirt freshman big man, and the other Jakob Jackal that they signed. Didn't see a whole lot out of them. Tyler Ralston, the other SUU transfer, he came in, and as a stretch four, he knocked down a couple threes. But, I mean, and JoJo Zamora looked pretty impressive as a point guard. But, man, I'll tell you what, Cedric Bearfield, if you haven't seen the highlights, I mean, I don't know if you watched any of or saw highlights, but go watch the highlights. He looked really impressive. He can handle the ball. He can shoot. His vision was, top-notch. He's going to be a fun player to watch, and he broke down some people with his handles, and then he had this floater that was like, you know, a really good floater in basketball always gets my attention because it's so difficult to do. And he had one of the ones that it's one of the tougher ones I've seen, I thought, in my opinion. But, I mean, yeah, Utah is going to, I think they'll be better than what a lot of people picked them at. It's going to be a tough Pac-12 conference. They have a lot of good teams. Washington, Oregon, UCLA, Arizona are all really good teams in Colorado. But I think Utah will still – I'd be disappointed if Utah doesn't make the tournament at least an 8 or 9 seed. I think that's where they could – I don't think they'll win the conference at all. I think the conference is too good this year. But, yeah, I mean, I like to see a couple of the new things, and I got excited when I saw how good Cedric Bearfield and David Collette looked. I knew David Collette would be good just because I've been around him for so long, and I knew what to expect out of him. But, yeah, it just sucks that we don't get him till – you know, we don't get them the whole year.
Well, Pac-12 is one of those conferences that always has 8 or 9 teams in the tournament. So I would expect Utah to be good enough, even if this is a rebuilding year with those new guys and they end up being somewhere in the middle of the standings. I really don't know how well they are going to be. I wouldn't expect them to win the conference or anything like that and be able to see it again or anything like that. But I don't think getting the tournament out of the realm, honestly, it's Pac-12 is always deep hoops, and 8 or 9 is usually where the worst seeds of the Pac-12 are, maybe a 10 or 11 if they're just having a difficult season. But I don't see that as an impossibility, honestly. I can definitely see them playing in mid-March.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you pointed that out, because, you know, I'm trying to look at it and not put on the goggles too much. But, yeah, I mean, they have 12 new guys, so if they're going to do their rough patch, I think they can take Butler at home. But if they, you know, they don't have a really good preseason. They have Butler at home, and I think they go, the team they go to out back east is escaping my mind right now.
I'll have it here in a sec.
Seton Hall, maybe?
They've got – wow, their schedule is terrible. Two teams I don't even know. Coppin State, UC Irvine, Butler, Montana State, UVU. They travel to Xavier.
Xavier, that's what it is. Okay, so, yeah, Xavier's a top 10 team, preseason top 10 team. I don't think they'll win there, but I think they could get Butler.
Xavier went deep in the tournament last year, too, and I think they returned a lot of people. And they play West Coast Conference powerhouse San Francisco.
Yeah.
The alma mater of Bill Russell.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of people didn't know that. San Francisco won a bunch of NCAA titles because of Bill Russell.
Well,
but
worthless information
that everyone didn't know.
The last thing I just wanted to touch on with the basketball side is big news coming out yesterday. I don't know if you saw it. Yesterday.
I did.
The Utes got Brandon Carlson, the Bingham big guy,
big.
I think he's the number one. He was the number one player in the state. So last year, BYU cleaned up with the local guys, with Yoli Childs and one or two other guys. But yeah, this is big to get another big man in from Utah who had Utah, BYU, UCLA and who else was it? Oregon, I think, maybe is his top four. So, yeah, a good pickup for them, you know, recruiting standpoint from the UT. You don't hear a whole lot. But, yeah, good, you know, good to see that from the Utah standpoint, especially because they kind of striked out last year with the local guys. I did want to say this, too. Parker Van Dyke went on his, you know, redshirted or played his freshman year and then went on his mission. He looked surprisingly good as well. It'll be good to have a shooter that can go off the dribble, similar to what BYU has with an Emery and a Haas. So, yeah, another local kid that I hope can get some time and find some time on the floor. So, anything else you wanted to touch on?
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. No, Cougars don't have that great of an out-of-conference schedule this year. So winning anything less than 30 games is a disappointment for BYU basketball this season. They should destroy teams. Pulling up their schedule here. I know they play USC. That'll be a tough game. Obviously, it's out there. It's a really cool matchup. USC and BYU play, and then Gonzaga and I believe it's Arizona play the same night. So it's kind of like a Pac-12 West Coast Conference sort of deal that they got there. So
where
that
is it
will
at?
Be a fun matchup. I think that's at the Staples Center, honestly. December 3rd.
Oh, it is in LA. It's not okay. Because I know they did something like that at the MGM Grand 2 years ago, which is something like that. They did Washington. Utah played UNLV, and Washington played like Oklahoma or something like that, which is kind of cool. But yeah.
Yeah, this one will be at the Staples Center. BYU, USC, Gonzaga, Arizona. So that'll be fun to watch. But that's really BYU's only out-of-conference game that brings any attention. So they've got to win 30 games. I think they can do it. They've got all this talent. It's the best recruiting class on paper in school history. Expectations are high. These next 3 years, you've got to see at least one or two Sweet 16 appearances for Coach Rose, or it's time to start calling for things to change, especially being in the West Coast Conference. You have to compete in that conference for sure.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think BYU and Arizona and Gonzaga will have more fans there than USC will for the the game at the Staples Center. I really think so.
And some UCLA fans, maybe.
Yeah, maybe some UCLA fans in there as disguise. But yeah, you're right. I think it's going to be interesting to see because, you know, missions do affect basketball players. It just, you know, when you're not being able to, when you're not playing at a skill level like you were before, it's going to affect him. I thought Emery came back surprisingly well. If Haas can come back at the end, be similar, and Mika as a big man, it's not as big of a time off for them. But yeah, I agree. I think BYU fans should expect one or two Sweet 16 runs, and I think that they need in the next 3 years to win a West Coast Conference championship. And I think BYU fans thought going into this that they would have won already because, you know, it's pretty much been them, Gonzaga and SMU. But yeah, for whatever reason, BYU every year has had one of those one or two games that they lose that they shouldn't. And hopefully from a BYU fan standpoint that they're able to avoid those this year.
This season will be a little tough with the guys just coming in off missions, and Gonzaga and both St. Mary's are ranked in the preseason. So they return basically everybody except for Kyle Wilcher, of course, but Gonzaga always reloads. Gonzaga's ranked 13th, St. Mary's 19th. So this year will be tough, but I fully expect that's my expectation. They have got to start winning in the West Coast Conference. You can't go from the Mountain West, which at the time was an elite basketball conference with UNLV, Utah, San Diego State, BYU. It was a top conference, and then you go to a worse conference and you start playing worse. It's just unacceptable. And especially with this recruiting class they've got, it's time to start putting up, and I'm excited to see what they're going to do this season.
Well, I'm with you. It's going to be fun. Obviously, we'll touch on the, you know, the Utes and Cougs for basketball as we go here. But obviously, we talked about it. Their schedules aren't going to be really tough, so it'll be pretty brief. We're probably slanted towards the Jazz, but until conference play in the end of December picks up. But I'm excited, man. Basketball's here. We're in the final home stretch, if you want to say, for college football, and it's gonna be a fun time. So once again, we appreciate the input. A couple people tweeted at us that we didn't get to mention. We forgot to mention in those segments, but once again, we appreciate those people and their interactions with us. So we'll make sure we get you on there next show. Trying to squeeze through some stuff here today. So
yeah,
feel free to hit us up.
Jam-packed show, you know, obviously missing last week, so our apologies there. Definitely keep interacting. We'll get you part of the show. We love it when you're able to get involved. And it's big week. It's going to be an exciting weekend.
It is, it is. And make sure you give us your thoughts. J_J Podcast, at Jimmy Chesh, and at The Real Roscoe. But, let's have fun this week. See what there is. Cougar fans, with the bye, enjoy it, get healthy, and then they close out their season. So it should be fun. NBA starts, and go Utes, go Jazz, get it going.
And go Cougs.
Hey, guys.
Oh, big golf, huh?
All right. Well, see you later.